Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Haha, just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
This weekend, I am going to be in Jacksonville, Florida, and Tampa, Florida, and Atlanta, Georgia, with Dane Cook, closing out the Tell It Like It Is tour. This is the second to last weekend, so if you haven't seen the show, and you live in Florida or Atlanta, come to the Florida Theater in Jacksonville on Thursday the 7th, Friday at the McAfee Theater in Tampa, Florida. Been to Tampa once, did some late night karaoke with Scott Vaughan from my old high school, and I think he still lives there. Tampa's the type of place where you reconnect with people that you never thought you'd see again, and Scott Vaughan used to tackle people in the fifth grade playing basketball, not football. Shout out to Scott. And the Tabernacle on Saturday, November 9th in Atlanta, Georgia. All those tickets at DaneCook.com. Brad Williams this weekend will be at the Laugh Camp Comedy Club, new comedy club in St. Paul, Minnesota. Friday, Saturday, go see Brad, St. Paul, Minnesota, Laugh Camp Comedy Club. Tickets at BradWilliamsComedy.com. Today's episode is a returning guest, a favorite of the podcast. You know him, you love him. It's Steve Byrne. Steve Byrne, co-creator and star of Sullivan and Son on TBS. Countless Tonight Show appearances, Conan appearances. He's got two films that he comes on to talk about. One, the opening act with Cedric the Entertainer, Jimmy O. Yang, Whitney Cummings, Tom Segura, about the journey of an opening act comedian. And we get into the nitty-gritty of making a movie, casting your friends, and just truly chronicling the story of an opening comedian that nobody I think has really done and has gotten to see the ins and outs of. So Steve talks about that and his amazing documentary about the amazing Jonathan, who, if you're not familiar, an amazing magician comedian. And the documentary is called Always Amazing, the true story of the life and death of Jonathan, this incredible, amazing comedian, and unfortunately is in the, you know, final stages of life, because he's got pretty awful disease. And man, this documentary, I remember when Steve was first putting it together, because I was like, holy shit, I can't believe I didn't know about what Jonathan was going through. And he's like, yeah, dude, I'm gonna do this documentary, and he has all this amazing footage, and this guy, people need to know about, you know, how influential he's been in the comedy world and on so many people globally. It's fucking phenomenal, and it's available on YouTube for free. So that's the best part. Just type in Always Amazing, The Amazing Jonathan on YouTube, and watch truly one of the best documentaries, and I love documentaries, that I've ever seen. Steve crushed it. Enjoy that. Follow Steve on Twitter and Instagram at Steve Byrne Live. Follow me at Adam Ray Comedy, Brad at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast. Email us at aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com. Where you got the pod, how you got into it, your favorite eps, and I will be sending Adam Ray merch to you for the rest of the year. It's an Adam Ray giveaway, baby. Just in time for the holidays. Speaking of the holidays, my comedy music album, Songs for the People, is finally going to be available for pre-order November 29th. So just go to AdamRayComedy.com on November 29th and pre-order that shit. Going to be debuting a lot of original songs and previewing some of them on some eps coming up, which we've got so many great ones. Brent Morin, Dana Carvey. So make sure you're subscribed on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get the pod. Comment and rate on the iTunes page. AboutLastNightPodcast.com for all your ALN merch. ShopAdamRay.com for Adam Ray merch. BradWilliamsComedy.com for all Brad shit. And, of course, the About Last Night cruise, the Brad and Adam Spooktacular 2020, is happening. The cruise, next Halloween. It's a year out, but fucking plan your shit. Get your sitters, get your pot, and get your bathing suit ready. We're going to take off from Long Beach, go to Mexico for 3 days. The goddamn comedy jam's coming. Special guest. It's going to be a blast. Get your tickets at AdamRayComedy.com or TravelByParker.com and come join us on the cruise. Shit. I think that's it. Yeah? All right. Brad's leaving soon. That's a bummer. So get into these last few eps, you know? But there are big changes coming. A football comedy show with Mark Sanchez for Showtime that I will be doing. And the ALN podcast is going to make some pretty sweet big changes that I will be announcing towards the end of the year. But before that, eat your last few pieces of Halloween candy, because we got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way so that you can enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Steve Byrne.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Do you like the sound of your own voice?
No.
You?
I don't mind it, but I don't like listening to sets and hearing myself.
Yeah.
I guess no, because that's...
Yeah.
Even like when I think
there'd be something wrong with you if you're like, I religiously record my sets every night, and then when I listen to them, God damn, is it amazing.
For foreplay, I can't even get hard unless I hear myself talk to a woman. There's certain voices I wish I had. I just saw the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I was like, man, Brad Pitt has a cool set of pipes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, he just has a cool set of anything.
Hey. You sure you're married?
I mean,
Brad Pitt is...
Is it cheating?
No. I think you have to.
Is it cheating if you both have the same name? Brad Williams, Brad Pitt. I don't think it's cheating.
That sounds like it's going to be your opening line to him if you ever meet him and you're like, I think we're supposed to be friends.
Well, he's friends with Jim Jefferies and I'm friends with Jim Jefferies, so I think I may be able to meet him at some point.
That's right. Is there a celebrity that you found out was a fan of your comedy that really got you excited?
No.
I mean, Vince is pretty good, right?
Yeah, but he wasn't like a fan of my comedy. He was never like, oh my God, I saw it. Like, I've never...
He just never seen an Asian guy before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was fired up for that.
It's just like, well, this is new.
Yeah. No? It's always normal.
People. Like back in the, I remember when I first saw my first taste of Steve Byrne was on MySpace.
Ooh,
during the Sierra Mist, give it up for the Mist contest. What was it? The Steve Byrne.
Stand up or sit down.
Yeah. There it is.
Put the mist in your face. Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a different contest. But Steve also won that.
That's good, though.
Stand up or sit down.
But hug that mic a little bit more. Yeah. Pull it up a little bit more to your face.
Oh, sorry. Are we going?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we're going.
Oh, yeah.
I thought we were just fucking around until.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, no.
I know. That's
oh,
how we
shit.
Do it.
I didn't know we're on.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So, yeah.
Hi. Hey, what's
bro,
up?
Professional broadcaster.
Yeah. There's your real boy. Yeah. Hey, good to see you, man.
Great to be here.
Dude, so MySpace, man. That's the first time I saw you, dude.
Let's talk about it.
Remember that? No, but that was crazy because people forget. First of all, about MySpace, let alone the fact that it was a juggernaut for exposure for comedy. Like, they had the featured comedians when this contest started. I think it was its first attempt at, like, you know,
incorporating
stand-up. Yes.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I don't know. All I know is that they did this, and I can't even remember if you could post like videos or something. I don't know what I don't remember that much about MySpace to
yeah.
me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my top eight.
Sure.
And then
having to have those conversations with friends like, yeah, it's more of a business top eight.
Yeah.
Like
I used to have a joke where I go, when MySpace expanded to top 40, I go, you truly know if you're dead to someone or not if you don't even make it in their top 40. But like, I would have friends that were just like, dude, you understand, man, Obama, like if I do run into him and I tell him he's not in my top 40, you know, because it was at the point where you could put like
anybody. Yeah,
because even people that Obama didn't run his MySpace page, obviously.
Sure.
But he had one, and so, and you were like, well, yeah, I gotta, because it was also showing people like, this is what I want my top 40 to look like, you know.
Yeah, it's like, so yeah, and then it, yeah, you'd always get an idea of who the person was by like, okay, they've got Tila Tequila, Forbidden, and three other porn stars, and
she was
then
huge.
She was huge.
Right? Yeah, that was like,
I mean, yeah, but you know, she's no, that's pretty much gonna end for her. But I mean, because also you can't a career like her career happened because of what?
She was everybody's friend. I mean, now, I mean, we say it's done, but now it's sort of happening again with all the Instagram quote unquote influencers and models that do anything except like, well, here's my tits in the morning, Taco Tuesday and tits.
Taco Tuesday, tit day.
Yeah.
Here's my, Yeah. Although, like, I don't know.
Well, like we're all agonizing over posts. Like, is this funny?
I know. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
It's weird because, like, I go through ebbs and flows. You're great at it. Somebody like Joe List is really funny. I follow Joe List. He's great.
Are you talking about Twitter?
Yeah, on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, Roy Wood's great at it.
Oh, yeah.
Roy Wood just posted a video on Instagram where
Buffalo getting in there.
His son brought it, maybe not his son. I don't know if he has kids. Yeah. But a small child brought him a toy that was broken. It was a car.
Yeah.
And he fixed it and then gave him a bill for the parts and labor. Like an actual bill, and was like, "All right, you now owe me $1,200 because I repaired the fake light on your ambulance."
It's so funny.
And he just does stuff like that where you're like, "God, I don't know how to tune my brain into being that kind of funny."
Yeah,
it's really cool.
I find it I hate posting because there's like weeks where I'll be like, I'll be on fire, I'll just screen cap stuff, write jokes, and then I'll just for a month straight, I just won't post anything other than like clips,
sure,
of stand up.
Do you have to remind yourself to stay engaged in social media?
Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I just don't like it. I prefer not to do it. Do you like doing it?
No, not at all. I have to remind myself to post clips and videos and try to do, you know, but every time I'm doing it, I just don't like, because we're in it enough, you know. It's like phone is enough of scheduling and you know, that's where I record all my, you know, sets and remind myself things and bits, because after I lost like a joke notebook, I was like, I have to do everything in the phone, because if I lose the phone, I can still find all those
it's
emails.
It's in the cloud.
Yeah. Or just
your
in
jokes
emails,
are in
you know?
The cloud.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But I mean, I have to, yeah, it's a chore, it feels like.
I don't like it. There's something like, to me, I don't like, this is okay. Turning the camera around and doing this to me, to this day, I find it just, this is just me. I see other people, they do great at it. I'm not knocking anybody that does it. But to turn a camera and like start talking, I feel icky.
It feels weird when you're out in areas, and right now we're on social media. We're on Adam's social
media
talking
about how much social media sucks. I hate doing Insta stories, but just talking about how much I hate it.
Yeah.
When you do it, it's great. When I don't like doing it.
I know, dude.
Yeah. That,
even
and
when
like,
you see someone like Sebastian, who you just like revere, and you're like,
he's the last person in the world I ever thought would be A, doing this.
I know.
Yeah.
B, putting his family in it. Like, he's the last guy I thought. Yeah. And then I see him doing it, I'm like, maybe I should. I can't.
Yeah, because he still has found a way to do his voice through it, you know. But
yeah.
But again, I hear you. It's like it's letting people in on another part of your life, and like somebody like Whitney, who just I think she truly, it's second nature now for her, like doing it. And also, when you have that many followers, I mean, maybe this we'd all be thinking differently if we had millions of followers.
Sure.
But like, and you're feeling like you need to feed your audience with that type of content, but like Whitney will be going through her closet sometimes, and I'm watching, I'm just like, why am I watching this? But then, like, you know, I know I've talked to girls that are just like, yeah, it's like they think it's hilarious, and they're
celebrities
like, they
have
love
closets.
That insight, you know.
Yeah, because celebrities have closets just like us.
Yeah. what a hot take, Brad.
Oh yeah, that's why you come to me. Hot take Williams. What's your favorite hot dog, Steve Byrne? You have kids, do they breathe?
Just like us, they're just like us.
Yeah.
Have you ever like missed a moment, like your kids are doing something, you're like, hold on, I gotta finish this tweet?
No, but there are, like, the one thing I will say, the only time I was ever tempted to post something on my kids, and I never would, and I never have, I just want my kids to be mine.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's you have everything up, but this is me. This is special to me. There's one time we had gone and seen The Force Awakens, my daughter and I, and she's maybe five at the time, and we're eating, lunch at the Cheesecake Factory. And she closes her eyes and puts her hands out like this. And she's just doing it for like, she keeps opening her eyes and close it, open it and close it. And I was taking pictures of her and I go, what are you doing? She goes, I'm using the Force to move my plate. And she thought, she was dressed as Rey too.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was like perfect. It looked like she was trying to like, and it was just, to me, it was like so cool to see like a five-year-old. And I felt like it was five-year-old me, like, I remember being five, like thinking I could fly and like running as fast as I could and jumping up thinking, I'm going to fly this time. And I kept doing it. And just that innocence and blind eyes, I'm going to fucking do it. And that was the only time I ever thought of posting something about my kids. But I can't.
Here's a very important parent question.
Yeah.
what order did you show your kids the Star Wars movies in? Because now we've had prequels, we've had sequels, we got the original trilogy, you got the side projects, which fit in the timeline. Like, where do you when do you show them Rogue One?
I go original three.
Okay.
Then I got them into Force Awakens and stuff. And the prequels, I was like, yeah, you'll see it when you see it. And then I showed them it. And to this day, when my kids actually do want to watch it, and they love Star Wars. They always want to see Return of the Jedi. They always, that's the one, because of the Ewoks.
It's the Ewoks.
Yeah.
Now what about tiny things are lovable? Everyone loves them.
Now what about
hot take?
Now what about
hot take, Williams? Tiny things are lovable. Moving on, back to you guys.
What about the Ernest movies? In what order do you show them? Goes to jail, then Christmas.
I think you go you scared go straight.
Biodome in the army now.
In what order do you show your kids the Pauly Shore movies?
Shore. box set.
They've got to sell a Pauly Shore box set, right?
I'm sure.
There's got to be a weasel.
If you have at least three hit comedies, I feel like,
yeah,
you know, that's worthy of a box set, right?
I feel like if we go to Walmart, we can find a weasel pack somewhere.
Dude, I know they've got Schwarzenegger, because I had to really, truly, you know, fight every urge in my body not to get this Schwarzenegger combo pack at Best Buy once that was Last Action Hero.
Yeah.
Solid.
True Lies and Twins. Kindergarten Cop.
Oh, okay. I was going to say it was one of those. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I was about to say Suburban Commando. Who is that?
That was Hulk Hogan.
Oh,
yeah.
That was a good call.
I know Holy way too shit. Much about things that'll never help
that
me.
That was a great movie. Was that him as like a... He played himself, but he was like a mom. He's like a nanny.
He was an alien.
Or was that Mr. Down. Nanny?
Mr. Nanny was him as a nanny.
How many Hulk Hogan movies were there?
Not enough.
I mean,
Rocky 3 doesn't count, right?
No, Rocky 3 absolutely counts. That's the debut of Thunderlips. And then he was in the movie No Holds Barred, where he battled Zeus, where the WWE actually had the actor that played Zeus in the WWE as a wrestler as Zeus. It was like this cross-promotion thing.
It was nice seeing you guys.
Okay.
Have a good day.
We're talking too much Hulk.
Does anybody else want to know about Hogan? I will fight you all.
But you're a big wrestling fan,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do wonder, because when I was a kid, I loved it. And I'm sure you probably get asked this. I'm not being an asshole. I'm not being a dick. Because I know that there's people that are super passionate about it. I mean, it is soap opera for guys. That's what it is, right?
But that's how I view it.
I know that there is athleticism.
Yes.
I know that those guys are tremendous athletes. Absolutely.
Yes.
There's rehearsal, you know, so they're good at follow, like, you know, there's acting involved.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, that's the thing I can't get over. Like I tried a few years ago. I was like, you know, it seems cool. Maybe I'll.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I can't.
I hear you.
I wonder what is it.
Do you watch James Bond movies?
Love them.
Okay. Do you ever think James Bond is not going to get the bad guy in the movie?
No.
Is James Bond ever going to die?
No, it's a different tone, though. You know what I mean? Like, the tone of it is all so... Look,
it's also like, who do you have playing Bond? You have, you know, Connery and what's his name?
Roger Moore.
Yeah, it's not Steve Buscemi. If it was Buscemi as Bond, you'd be like, yeah, dude, this guy's going to die in the first 10 minutes.
I would watch Buscemi Bond.
Buscemi Bond, yeah.
But it's that way. It's any TV show. It's any movie. You don't know how it's going to end. But you know probably the good guy's going to win.
Right.
So that's why you watch it. And it's really, it's like watching Cirque du Soleil, where you're like, that's amazing athletic ability. Like,
sure. Yeah, well, I never thought of it that way, I guess.
I respect it that way. I'm not watching it going, come on, Brock Lesnar beat Seth Rollins?
But there are guys like that, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely dudes
there's guys
who
like
can't
that.
Separate the theatrics of it, and they're just like,
yeah,
dude, then they get, like, really pissed off that their guy lost, right?
Because
you have to go in, like, the one time I went to a Monday Night Raw, everyone was chanting, and it was so silly that I allowed myself to give myself over to how silly it was, and like chant, and one guy came out, and everybody was like doing a tomahawk chop, I think, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, and people were doing like
racist.
They were doing this, and then they were doing. It was for the Native American guy, but people were doing this at one point. Who's that?
One guy came out. Everybody put on their white hood.
Yeah.
Burning crosses, tiki torches.
Yeah, there was one guy, Jew, that came out. They had like swastika signs.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's really fun. Cool. Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah. It's fun to when some guy you can tell they're about to do a choreographed move, and then the choreographed move goes wrong.
Right.
And then the entire stadium starts chanting, "You fucked up." I mean, really? That's fun for us.
Are you hoping something goes wrong?
I mean, you hope that something goes wrong, but that no one gets hurt. You don't want anyone to get seriously hurt. Then you have an own heart situation.
See,
but
I would want them to go ahead.
Sorry, but like behind the scenes, yeah, it's not all, you know, handshakes and beers. I'm sure there are guys that generally are pissed off because that guy's got a better contract. He's on the ascent. Yeah. He's getting all the attention.
Absolutely.
So why can't there? I mean, why can't there some reality that comes into it where they're actually, like, they are kind of taking shots at each other.
Yeah, and those are when guys cut promos and they bring up stuff that's actually happening, because that will happen,
yeah,
where they'll bring up, like, we all know that you just got divorced, or we all know that, because it happened one time where one wrestler legit started sleeping with another wrestler's wife.
For real.
And they brought that to,
into the, oh,
yeah, and that, whoa, legit happened, and then those guys legit had a match with each other. And
they really did,
yeah, and
did they throw,
like,
the script out the window and actually go at it?
I mean, yeah, if Matt Hardy does a close fist punch to Edge, you kind of go, yeah, I get that.
So who ended up winning that fight?
I think it was Matt Hardy, who was the guy that was cheated on.
Oh, good,
yeah,
that's the good.
What is the female equivalent to wrestling? I mean, it's not just female wrestling.
Real Housewives.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
The Bachelor. Where it's like, we know it's we're yeah, because you can make a lot of the same things for the same arguments for The Bachelor that you can for wrestling. Like, we know it's fake, but we just like to be lost in that world.
Yeah,
like same shit.
Yeah,
it is fake, right?
Bachelor or Bachelorette?
You know what? I've watched.
I do not.
One season I tried to watch, and then we had one of the Bachelors on, and so I watched a little bit more of that season just to.
Was it the one from Seattle?
No, just kidding. Nick Vial.
Yeah,
it was maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah,
2-3 years ago. And just to kind of get a sense of the world. And it, I mean, look, I get why it's so popular and entertaining,
yeah.
I mean, but also so produced. I couldn't help but watch. I mean, to me, it's funnier to see how douchey the dudes are than the girls. The girls, I just feel like they're, some of them are truly there, I think, for love, and
yeah,
then, and so dumb. And then there's some that are just like, yeah, like this is a chance for me to maybe cry on tape.
Yeah.
Send that, put that on my reel, you know, which also good on you. If you can somehow parlay that into something else, like you can't get mad at that. You're like,
based that no one
tricked
done
the system.
Yeah.
No one has
job.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing that always makes me laugh is some people are like, no, I'm going on this particular show to get famous. And I'm like, right, like all the other people from that show that got famous, or right, you can't name any.
None.
Like that, like those are the ones where I go, why are you
the first
doing
2 weeks
that?
Of those shows,
yeah.
Every new season, it's the fucking best.
Oh, really?
Because my wife watches it.
Mm-hmm.
It's garbage TV. But they always show the promo, like, next week on The Bachelor.
Yeah.
And you see, like, this wonderful, like, balloon going up and the sunset. And they're loving. And then all of a sudden the music changes. And you just hear dudes like, fuck you, motherfucker. You piece of shit. And then somebody's crying. And it's like, yeah. Like, there's the red meat. Give me more. Yum, yum.
There is a definite schadenfreude with reality TV where you just want to see people whose lives are more fucked up than yours.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Like, you want to see that. Like, I love watching the show Bar Rescue because I like watching these people run a bar the worst way you could ever run a bar.
It's astounding to me when you watch a show like that, or like Kitchen, yeah, Nightmares and stuff. You're just like, nobody, like, this is why so many businesses fail, because they're not doing the numbers. All you have to do is just do the numbers and clean the fucking cooler.
Clean the cooler.
Yeah.
Like, 90% of Bar Rescue is clean this fucking place
clean
up.
The fucking,
yeah,
cooler.
That's it.
And then it's like, let's go to the office. Let's crunch numbers. And
yeah,
just keep your books and keep shit clean. That's all I've learned. I could open a bar now. And these fucking idiots. It's,
hey,
like, come on in. It's like, how could you not clean the cooler?
You've seen
the show.
You ran a bar
you
on
ran
TV.
A bar.
Yeah.
And I think
come
you could
on
be a better,
yeah,
bar owner,
yeah,
than a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
You just go, bring in the studio audience now.
There truly is a reality show for everything. I mean, have you seen Couch Crashers?
Sorry?
Couch Crashers.
No.
That's because it's not a show, but you thought it was, and that's my point.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't be,
yeah,
surprised. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. There's a show for everything. Like,
it's produced by Pete Holmes.
Yeah. There's really...
It's just some guy who knocks on your door and sleeps on your couch for a month. And
that's actually not a bad idea.
And we see what happens.
That,
all right.
Like,
so
yeah,
we're all going in on this. We're,
yeah,
all,
yeah,
created,
yeah,
by... Okay. Executive producer.
Is there a reality show that you would go on now if it could... that wasn't even like... comedy oriented, not like a Last Comic or Bring the Funny.
You know what I would love is that Man versus Wild, where you get to go out with bears.
Yes,
bears, like, I would do that.
Good call, because they do celebrities on that. Yeah,
because I love like survival movies. I love like,
yeah,
those Nordic, you're stuck in the Arctic alone. Wow. Like, I'm obsessed with those
Tom
movies.
Hanks and Castaway. Or
I love shit like that.
What was the movie where Liam Neeson fights a wolf?
The
Gray?
Yeah,
The Gray, where he like...
Did you see that movie?
Yeah, he like puts bottles...
It was like, nah, come on. It just like, he lines up for a fight with the wolf, and then they build it as like, you're going to see him fight wolves, and then you see the wolf and you see him, and then it ends.
And then the movie just ends, you're like, we don't see him fight a wolf? Liam Neeson just put glass on his fingers like Wolverine, and we don't get to see that shit?
Show me... That's why I paid.
Yes.
The last one, Cold Pursuit, I saw... Did you see that one, Cold Pursuit,
no.
with Liam Neeson?
Cold
I saw Pursuit. It with Al Madrigal, and he I think he's like, I don't know that he runs it, but he created this thing called the Pasadena Dads Movies Club.
All these
dads need to get together, and we see...
From the producers of the Babysitters Club comes the Pasadena Dad Movie Club.
From the writer of Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants comes the Pasadena Dad Movie Club.
That's amazing.
We'll find like the dumpy, corny movie, whatever, and go.
Oh.
We're like, we got to see this. And dude, it was so alarmingly bad, we couldn't even make fun of it.
Yikes.
We all just walked out of it like, whoa, what the fuck was that? Like, we saw John Wick, and we were all high-fiving, laughing. It was great. But that Cold Pursuit was, I think it was the last movie I saw where I was like, this is, were you watching something? You're like, how did this get made?
Yeah.
Like, what happened? Was the director and then the studio, and they just partitioned, and they said, we're going to make this, and you make that. It's just so bad.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one thing when it's like a Sharknado, where it's like, we know this is bad.
Yeah.
It's very tongue-in-cheek, where you're like, this is so outrageous that we're aware of it. It's the other, there was some movie that came out like 8 months ago, where like some guys were planning a bank robbery during a tornado. Storm heist or something like that.
We Hurricane
were like,
heist,
and you're like, wow, executives that get paid.
Yeah,
we're like, that's gonna be a hit.
It's crazy. I don't know.
You ever see The Beach with Leo?
Loved it.
Yeah,
I mean, I loved the first half.
Yeah,
and then the second half, I was like, what's
what was the second half again?
It just got. There's so many movies like that. Like the end. Remember the Seth Rogen? The first half of
the
end, thought it was so... I was like, this is like one of the greatest comedies ever. And then it just took a hard left. I was like, what is this?
Well, what happens is people write themselves into a corner. They don't know how to write out of it. And they're like, let's just have them all be sleeping. And then you're like, okay. And then it just gets nuts. And now most people can say... Wait to hear this transition.
Yeah.
Most people can insult movies and be like, but they've never made one.
Mm.
You've made movies.
Oh.
So you could insult them.
Great transition.
I would I would never want to insult anybody that made a film, because I think even as bad as a film is, there is a production designer that cared, invested so much in that film.
The whole process.
Yeah, there's so many entities.
Editors, there's so many ways it can go bad, and so many people that did a great job.
Yeah.
That the reason why the movie sucked, they had nothing to do with. They acted the shit out of it. They best boy gripped the shit out of it. Or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they did their job right. The fact that the movie sucked wasn't their fault.
Yeah, I think it is such an arduous process to, you know, I've had the opportunity to do a documentary and a feature and getting ready to do another one. And I think just through that process, it's so easy to see something and in 20 minutes of movie theater go, fuck, let's just leave the theater. But I don't know. It's like a Plinko chip. I think every now and then you hit the 10,000 and it's a great movie. And the stars just happen to align for casting, for story, for editing, for marketing, for time of release, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many things that could go wrong with a film.
Yeah.
And the ones that are successful, I think it's just a testament to the miracle of it all happening to work out.
The documentary film that you made, which I watched again this morning.
Well, thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's about the comedian, magician, the amazing Jonathan. It's called Always Amazing. And you're like, all right, well, what streaming service do I have to have? YouTube, fuckers. It's there.
Yeah.
It's free.
Go
and
on
it's
it.
It's over
free.
How many views now?
We're about to hit 500,000 views in 2 months.
Yeah, buddy. So there you go.
Wow, dude.
And it's fucking good.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I'm not saying it because you're my friend. I'm saying it because it's fucking good. And it doesn't matter if you're like, well, I'm not into magicians, or I'm not into comedy.
Or I'm not into Jonathans. I like my John. I'm a John documentary guy.
I like regular Jonathans. Yeah. I don't need them to be amazing.
Regular Johns, amazing. Honest Johns, the guys that buy hookers, the Johns. I like those Johns, not Jonathan.
The amount of time too that you put into us, because we can all attest, like, we've known you've been working on it for, I mean, how many years?
It was probably 2 years, yeah, all in. But the tough thing is just getting all the archival footage and then getting it converted and all that other stuff. But the great thing about Jonathan is, like, in those archival footage, like, you could go back and see a set from 20 years ago, and it's still as relevant and funny as it is today. And I think that's why it's resonating so much, as opposed to, like I love Geraldo, right? Geraldo's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And he was so topical, though.
Yeah.
That if you go back and watch his stuff, we all know that time period of, like, the Iraq War, and you can make those jokes, and it'll be funny to us. But to a 22-year-old, you're going to go, I don't know. Yeah,
that does suck, because he was so brilliant, and you're like, but a lot of his material was, which is even what makes him be more brilliant, that he was so on point with, like, what was happening now, and be able to break it down in such a sharp way. But
Jonathan, who doesn't like a guy sticking a pencil in his head?
In his head and all that.
Up his nose, in his ear.
You know, like, when Jonathan was given the terminal diagnosis, right?
Yeah.
And it's, as you guys know, it's got cardiomyopathy, diabetes, drug addiction, and it's this perfect storm. And some of it self-inflicted. And he's told he has a year to live.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, when he made the announcement, I've outlived the doctor's expectations by 3 years. I'm tired of waiting to die. I'm going to see if I can return to stage. When he made that announcement, as a fan and as a friend, I was like, somebody should make this doc. Somebody's got to do this. This is great.
Yeah, that's
and
what prompted it, huh?
I called him and said, can I do this doc? And the only reason I really wanted to do it is because I knew about him and Joel. I knew about that relationship he had.
That's in that story I had no idea about.
And tell people who Joel is if they haven't seen it.
So Joel Osborne, when Jonathan, you forget, this is before social media. Jonathan is an international act. He's Russell Peters. He's killing it everywhere. He's in Australia, and every year he goes to Australia, you know, there's this 12-year-old kid backstage. Can I sign this? He goes back the next year. A 13-year-old kid, can you sign this? And he just gets to know this kid and takes him under his wing. And Joel is such a fan. His father's in advertising. He got Jonathan this commercial that paid really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so every year, Jonathan would give him a few more responsibilities.
Yeah.
And eventually, at 18 years old, he says, will you be my road manager? And Joel, you're taking one of the sweetest, kindest, nicest human beings I've ever met in my life, just a well-balanced guy, and you're taking him at 18 and throwing him into Las Vegas to be in charge of a drug addict.
Yeah.
And there were so many other stories we couldn't put in because we didn't want it to be Rick and Morty, you know?
Right.
But to me, this relationship between two men that on paper should never be in each other's lives, they should not be friends.
No.
They shouldn't know each other by their action, by Jonathan's actions. But for some reason or another, it worked. And to me, there was this heartwarming fraternal bond between these two that I said, that's Jonathan's the face, Joel and Jonathan is the heart.
And that's what you have in the doc, that it's so redeeming, where it's not just all doom and gloom, where you see this glorious relationship. And like, it's weird, and Jonathan makes jokes about it, where he goes, where I was just hanging out with this 13-year-old kid and bringing this 13-year-old boy with me everywhere. He's like, now they look back on it, kind of like...
kind of creepy, yeah.
But when you look at what they were, like, and Jonathan was Joel's hero. Like, imagine you growing up in Pittsburgh, and all of a sudden you get a call from Mario Lemieux going like, hey, I want you to be my new manager.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you want.
Yeah, you do it.
And
and then the fact that Joel's parents let him fly a world away to be with this guy.
At 18, and Vegas. And, like, Joel never indulged. He never got wrapped up in the scene. He could have gone crazy, and he never did. The guy meditates and stuff, and I don't know. To me, it was just that dynamic was so interesting. It was as interesting as Jonathan's story arc itself, and I thought this would be a great compliment. So,
is that something that you discovered while you were making the film, or before? Like, or did you plan that kind of before?
I even did it? Because I was working on the opening act, this feature that I told you guys about.
Feature film.
So this feature film, I knew story beats, I knew story, and I was plotting it out in my head. I was like, this could be this, because I knew all their stories. I knew all their ups and downs. I knew all their fights, because Joel and I are super tight, and Jonathan and I are friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been privy to their relationship, all the story beats. I knew everything, and I was like, it could be this. Here's your midpoint, here's your call to action, etc. And I just saw it all flushed out, and I called Jonathan. I said, this is it. This is how I do it. He says, great. I called Joel. He said, great. I called my buddy I went to college with. I said, get a camera. Let's do this. He said, great. And we edited the whole thing in my garage So I'd go on the road Thursday through Saturday, and then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'd edit it with my buddy Jason in my garage, and then we shipped off a working cut to Brian Getz, who's a professional editor, and he streamlined it and waxed and washed the car for us, and he's done amazing. He just did the Steve Bannon documentary, and
so you guys did all the footage, the interview stuff on your. That's what you needed to get that, because you had all the videos and pictures and. To go with it, which I think is what any great doc needs, right? You need all that stuff to assist the interviews
so you can
help tell the story.
Yeah, well, the good thing is I knew the story. I wasn't waiting for the film to happen. Right. I knew what the film was. So when I did that interview with Jonathan, it was 6 hours. I knew every question I wanted to ask him. I was like, I got the film. And then I went to Joel, and I had him ping pong the same story beats. What is your take? And so it's fun to hear their different dynamic, like the bets, the crazy bets that
the bet,
Jonathan
the
would
bets
do.
Were insane that this kid is working for Jonathan, making good money, but then making a secondary income of just doing essentially stupid dares,
crazy shit for Jonathan.
Jonathan tells him to do, and goes, "Wow, you crawled inside that homeless guy's sleeping bag. Here's $200 bucks. Like that's crazy."
Yeah, but I think that's the fun of Jonathan, is that there is this spontaneity and creativity that is never turned off. And when you hang with the guy, he's fun. And when you go to his house is all rigged with magic tricks. There's shit everywhere.
You saw one in the dock where he has this spider up on the wall.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy goes like, wow, you found... He goes, yeah, I found that spider in my house. As the guy's looking at this giant spider that's behind glass and dead, a fake spider falls from the ceiling right in front of his
right
face.
Funny,
and you're just like... Holy shit, because that would
living
kill
in a
you.
Gag house.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a gag house.
A good
house.
Gag house, you know.
Well, you go.
Yeah.
No glory holes.
Yeah.
No gagging. Actually,
we know.
Actually
yeah.
Look at that hole.
He's the Chucky doll in his place. So it's like the original Chucky doll.
Oh, wow.
You walk in, you're like, holy shit, that's the fucking Chucky doll.
Yeah.
And he's talking to you about the Chucky doll. And he's like, now look at the shoes. Those shoes are. And as he's talking to you, he's walking behind it. There's a lever. And you're like, now look at the shoes. Do you know that those are actual? And he fucking pulls this lever, and Chucky springs forward, and his eyes enlarge. You're like, what the fuck?
Oh my God,
it's
dude.
Wild.
That's
absolutely
brilliant.
Wild.
And you see that side of Jonathan because, like, you see him going to the doctor, and still doing jokes and tricks.
Yeah, so you guys did. You went with him to do that stuff.
Yeah.
Before he went on tour to get the doctor to just see the gravity of what he's actually going through. All these story beats in there, and Jonathan through it all still maintains a sense of levity and humor about it. But look, he, you know, that was the selfishly for me the other revealing part of like doing this doc with somebody that knows that he's going to die.
Yeah.
And there was a moment in it where he's talking about how scared he was to go back on stage, but how much it meant to him. He was identified through performing, right? And then somebody takes that away. And as a comedian, you know, you're going through this and you're watching those interviews and you're in the edit bay and you're watching it over and over again and you're seeing the camera in on him and, you know, you're just seeing raw emotion from him. And it just made me, especially in that moment, really want to not take for granted what we get to do every night as performers, as comedians, because at any moment, like imagine stand-up being taken away from you. It's like, fuck, I don't know what I'd do.
Yeah, if you woke up tomorrow and you couldn't talk. Like you're like, oh, what? Like, what would we do?
I guess you could
we
still
have,
write, but it's not the same as getting up on that stage and taking that mic and
it and you kind of really see that. And now it's weird watching because I just heard Jeremy Lin give a speech where he was crying on a stage in front of an audience because he's like, I'm done. Like, I was the biggest thing in the world, and now no NBA team is signing me. And he's crying, and it's easy as a guy to just kind of go, ah, pussy. You're
sure.
But then you watch your doc, and you realize, oh, his entire identity is being taken away from him.
Everything since he was probably 10.
Yeah. Everything, every day of his life was probably basketball.
From bending spoons to
in some way, shape, or form.
With Robin Williams to being a Vegas headliner, all of it. And not only that, but succeeding to the highest levels of like maintaining relevancy
Vegas. Making $50,000 a week in the late 80s, 90s in Vegas.
Yeah, just off of merch, by the way.
Just,
like his merch checks were like $30,000 a week or something like that.
Oh my God.
It's like crazy.
What was it like being there with him when he got back out on stage?
It was very scary because we honestly did not know if he was going to die. I mean, you guys know his act. He is just a wrecking ball. He's high energy.
Yeah.
And he's nonstop. I mean, he seems coked up on stage, and he is coked up on stage.
And what was he saying about, like, it was if he stood for too long or if he did too, there was some sort of a set out guideline about if he does this too much, he might cause his body to really get distressed, or what was it?
Yeah, well, with cardiomyopathy, it's a degradation of your heart, and so the blood doesn't pump as well as, you know, his heart's at like 40% capacity. Mm-hmm. And you couple that with diabetes, he has no circulation. So the doctors have been telling him for years, you got to cut your foot off. We got to take your foot off. And he won't do it. You know, he's riding it out. And one of the things we didn't put in this, in the documentary, that I look back on, I'm like, maybe I should have, but I'm glad I didn't, because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, is that the reason Jonathan is still here with us today is that he is taking stem cells off the black market from Mexico, having them shipped up to Vegas, and via a doctor there, being injected with the stem cells. So I thought, well, that's fucking crazy. And I wanted to put it in the film, but I know that if I put this in the film, then somebody from the FBI could see it potentially and go, we're going to track down this fucking doctor. Yeah. And I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're not announcing it like on a podcast.
So I'm going to tell it on a podcast.
Oopsies.
At least no one listens to this. It's fine.
Yeah.
But, but at the same time, you understand the same way when Andy Kaufman was sick, he started going to crystal healers and stuff.
Yeah,
sure.
It's real easy to make fun of people that do certain things, but then when you're faced with that situation, I'll rub CBD oil on all over my body. I'll take light baths. I'll rub crystals. I'll put a crystal up my butt. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like you're fighting.
I'll do that anyway.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of other ways to.
Another Tuesday for Adam.
Yeah. Crystal butt Tuesday. There's a lot of other ways to do
crystal
things.
Crystal lights failed and campaign.
Yeah. That especially for healing, that people just don't know about or don't take the time to research that there's
but you always hear, I think when you're in those situations, right, you're going to hear about that miracle case, and that's what's going to give you hope, and then you're going to go down the rabbit hole and find all those alternative medicines or alternative ways to potentially cure it. And why wouldn't you? Because I remember that great line in the Minority Report, that movie where Tom Cruise walks into that greenhouse with that woman and she strangles the flower. She goes, the thing that's crazy about life, if you strangle anything, it'll fight to survive. And I think that's true of life.
Oh, yeah, because the flower cuts her arm.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and it's like, that's true. Or in the words of Jeff Goldblum, life finds a way. Yeah. Which that wasn't a Jeff Goldblum impression, because we've had Piot on this damn podcast and I can't touch his impressions.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say the Tom Cruise line when he was on the Today Show and he goes, do you know the history of psychiatrics, Matt? Matt, do you know psychiatric health, Matt? And Lauer's like, I just have a sex button. I don't know what you're talking about.
Imagine watching that interview now going, oh, Cruise is the good one.
That's crazy.
That's madness.
Oh, the tables turn. Did you ever find reasons to... Because that's a big, to put together a documentary film like this and to just know the work that is involved with it, or maybe you didn't know, and maybe that was the reason why you jumped in so fully, but did you find at any point reasons to talk yourself out of doing it?
No, because I was always passionate about the story. Mm-hmm. I was always passionate about telling the story, and I knew how to do it. The only time I ever really kind of bumped on it was when you realize the business aspect of it all, when the business bleeds into it, and then you get involved with film festivals and like, other people
in the
industry.
Can this make me money? Is it worth my time?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
And you're hearing stuff from managers and agents like, oh, this is going to be great, this is going to be the... And it turns into something you didn't intend to get into it for the first place.
Yeah.
So we took it to YouTube because I was like, look, what does everybody have? Everybody has YouTube, and I want this to be accessible to everybody. And
right away,
talking to Bill Burr and Al Magical at All Things Comedy, it's like, do you think we could partner up? They're like, fuck, done deal. And we just put it up there. And I mean, you guys know YouTube can be a dumpster fire in the comment section, but I mean, this thing has been like 99% positive.
That's awesome.
I've never seen something where it's redundantly like nice or his fans are coming out of the woodwork, and it's really nice to see that.
Well, you told the story so well, and you again encompass so much of the human side of all this. And the footage that you had such a solid amount of that too, because like even for my folks who were watching that were like starting to remember as they were watching, like, oh yeah, I remember seeing this guy at some point, or they were so enamored by all the footage and getting to see the, you know, the here and now of it all, and to see like the doctor visits, and that really made it just a lot more human for you to connect to as somebody that being like, God, I like whatever it is in your life, like we just touched on, like if, imagine having to lose a that, you know,
what, well, I thank how you would react. For A, watching it, and B, having me on. And
oh, yeah,
C,
man.
Saying kind things.
It's but unbelievable.
The one thing I would suggest to anybody that's like in our industry, as you guys are, and obviously you're creative and you're, this podcast is a creative outlet, right? I never in a fucking million years would have ever thought I would have had a TV show if I didn't just sit down and write it. I never would have thought I would have made a documentary if I just didn't think, well, this story speaks to me. Fuck it, I'll just do it. Mm-hmm. And then I never would have thought I'd be writing and directing a film about what it means to leave a safe corporate job and pursue stand-up if I didn't just write. And
yeah,
and I wish somebody had told me that when I was younger, because
I would have done earlier.
I would have started earlier. Well, I just never would have believed, because I thought I was always at the mindset like, you're going to go to a comedy club, you're going to do your act, someone's going to see you and say, that's our kid.
Here, let me then, put you in some stuff.
Right, and then the vice president of show business.
I don't have to do anything myself, right? Except for just show up and do that.
Yeah. And I just thought, I'm going to get seen in a club. That's what's going to happen. And I was at clubs all the time, and it never happened.
Well, that's how it was for a beat, right?
For I think in the 80s, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
when people just
those days are
go to
gone,
a club.
Right?
Yeah. You don't.
Yeah. You are a true, prominent example of that, dude. I mean, and let's talk about the movie feature.
The opening act.
Opening act.
It's a prelude to Jennifer Lopez's second act.
Please tell me. So, J-Lo is the comic
you watched,
based around.
Yeah. If you watch J-Lo's the second act, you're like, what was her life before that? Yeah. Watch Steve Burns, the opening act.
A little Asian boy with no ass.
Yeah. Find that out.
Oh, it's times have changed.
Amazing transition.
So how does, okay, so which one, Amazing Jonathan Doc came before this, yeah?
I did that before, and I was basically on the road. I did Sullivan and Son, and it got canceled, and I was so proud of the run we had and what we had done, and it was like, this is why you moved to LA. You got to do it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, second Asian American ever have a sitcom. You know, I'll get a phone call at some point.
Who's the first?
Margaret Cho,
yeah.
Yeah,
nice. And then we came on, and then Fresh Off the Boat came on, then Dr. Ken.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was pretty cool to get to be a part of that lineage. Yep. And
so do you ever go up to Dr. Ken and go, you're welcome?
Oh, well, he was on my show twice, and he goes, I want to do this. And he was asking me a ton of questions.
Oh.
And so I think I...
There you go.
Hell yeah, you did.
Never got a fucking phone call from him to do his fucking show.
I mean...
And I fucking let him know that. Believe me, you. But I was basically on the road, and it was depressing because I was like, nothing's happening. And it was like, once again, let's just put pen to paper. So I wrote the opening act as an exercise to see if I could write a feature-length screenplay and see.
Where
if
did
I
you write it while you were on the road?
On the road. I was tired of like going out and drinking every night.
I was
going to
say, like, here's another great example of taking, because we can all attest again, like the time on the road, like you've got, I think some days you're like, I'm just going to stay in the hotel room and rest up and fuck around and then go do the shows and be well rested. And sometimes you want to go see the city if they got cool stuff to offer. And then other times it's like, well, I have work to do. Maybe I should use this time where I'm, you know, even distractions aren't out of your realm of possibility because you got your phone and computer. But like for me, when I'm away from here, just being away makes me feel more like, oh, I can truly get stuff done.
You can get something done. Yeah. And I think we're all at the point now in our careers where you've been to the cities enough that I did the museum.
Yeah,
right.
I've seen all the things.
I've done it all. So I was just kind of like bored. And I told myself, if I write a page a day, if I just do one page a day, in 3 months, I'll have a screenplay.
Good call.
So that was my mindset.
That's a great mindset.
But the thing is, if you write one page, you got to finish the scene, right?
Yeah. So you write five.
In a month and a half, I had finished it.
Wow.
Like,
because you got momentum going, right?
Yeah.
And you started to see what it was, and you're like, oh shit, like I want to write that next scene.
Yeah. And I thought that a weekend would be a great format for a film because it could be contained within 4 days because you have your introduction to it. And if it's a kid, it's an MC. Look, the whole film is about a kid that's got the safe job and he moonlights as a comic. And then he gets a phone call from his buddy, a fellow comic, says, dude, I can't MC this weekend in the Pennsylvania Improv. Can you do it? He's like, well, I don't know. It's just, and then he fucking, of course, takes the leap, right? Goes. And now you get to see stand-up via the eyes of the MC.
Yeah.
You're getting to understand what the light is, what an introduction is. You know, going out at night and partying with the feature act and having a great time.
Yeah, getting closer to the feature than the headliner, I'm assuming, right?
Yes, and then warming up to the headliner who
by
you
the end of the
up
weekend,
to by the end
which
of the
happens,
weekend,
yeah.
Which happens.
Dude, what a great way to display that dynamic, because that, especially through a weekend, like that is, that's how I met Geraldo, was hosting Forum in Irvine, and by the end of it, he was like, next time I come in town, we all gotta, like, but I buddied up with Jesse Joyce, which was his feature, and Jesse and I hit it off, and then we were all going to hang out like the next time, and it didn't happen. But like that was such a great. But I tried to keep my distance, which I'm sure like, and you probably used a lot of your own experiences from dealing with MCs. And did you ever MC or?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I MC'd a bit, then I featured, and then I wouldn't say because I was more of a New York comic.
Yeah.
And then I kind of like dabbled with emceeing and featuring, but then I, once I moved to LA, I had a half hour and then I was headlining, so I didn't have to do that much because I was already doing like all those sets in the city. But, but everything you're saying is exactly right. I mean, that is the story arc of the film.
That's awesome.
And getting to see the audience getting to be fish out of water via, you know, Jimmy O Yang in this film and. Mm-hmm. The first half of the film is all the romanticism and optimism and partying of with the feature act, and the back half is all the reality, isolation, and sobriety that comes with him finally meeting his childhood hero, who's played by Cedric the Entertainer, this road-weary veteran.
Amazing.
And so it's all encapsulated in 4 days, and it's the ups and downs and discerning whether or not this is the life you want to lead.
Yeah. I love that you did that, because I feel like there's movies that have been made about stand-up and shows that have been made about stand-up, but it usually only focuses on the headliner, because that's what the things that people want to see, and the headliner's life. This is such a great film in that people that are thinking about getting into stand-up can go like, well, what am I going to have to be dealing with when I'm not the headliner?
Yeah.
During my path up there? This. You're going to have to be dealing with this weekend.
Cedric basically gives him the blueprint for what it takes to be a stand-up. And it's exactly what people told me when I was starting in New York. I'd always ask all the headliners, like, what do you have to do? Write and get up on stage. It's like, that's it? And it's this great scene that develops from just those two things and Cedric denoting it all. And
it's so funny you say that. I got a message on Instagram this morning of some guy just being like, dude, I want to be a comic. What's the one thing that every comic has to be? And I went, consistent.
Yeah,
you consistent. Just wait for MySpace and hope that Sierra Mist is still on top. Wait, but, no. Is there a part of it that? Because again, and I love that Brad said like focusing on not.
And you
the
guys
headliner.
Are in it. I don't know if you know. I think I've told you this, but when in the hallway, when Jimmy is talking to Chip Fontaine, the manager of the club,
played by who?
Great name.
Played by Neil Brennan, who's the gatekeeper of his dreams, which is kind of like based off of the. It's not based off of Dave Stroop, the guy. It's based off the dynamic of Dave Stroop being like this gatekeeper to 14 clubs.
Yeah, and for those of you guys who don't know who he is, Dave Stroop is the booker at the Columbus Funny Bone, who essentially books every Funny Bone all over the Midwest and the South, and like if there's a Funny Bone, Dave Stroop owns it. So many comics, their first goal is you go to Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. You do a great set at the Columbus Funny Bone. Dave Stroop sees you and goes, "Wow, that person can work." And then you're
in. Your calendar you're is
in.
Filled.
Yep. Yeah. Except for me, Dave, you saw me when I was 2 years in and I opened for Paul Mercurio and I did great and we partied at Dave and Buster's and you have forgotten. So, it's been 10 years. I'm a headliner now. I've been on TV. Have me back. Steve, take it away. Steve, you were saying.
Back to you, Steve.
Wait, but I do think that there's some more people also too that can relate to the journey of not the headliner. Like young comics watching this, comic fans in general are going to get hard watching this, but like think about those people. There's more people starting stand-up than there are our position, right?
And I always thought I agree with you, because so many of those stand-up films, it's like, why do I want to see something about the headliner that's got to get off the road or it's got to go back on the road? It's like, I don't want to make a film about somebody driving home from Vegas. I want to make a film about a bunch of kids driving to Vegas. That euphoria, that excitement, that like, it doesn't matter if I'm sleeping in my fucking car tonight. I get 5 minutes on the stage and it's two states away and I'm going to drive 10 hours because when you're young and hungry, you'll do anything. There's such a romantic element to it that I gravitated towards. But in the hallway scene, I think you could see it like two or three times, there's upcoming events at the Improv, and then it's Rachel Feinstein, then it's Your Name, then it's Your Name.
Yeah, and
dude,
right next to our names, it says plenty of tickets available.
Tickets available. Speak for yourself.
Cheap tickets.
Groupon. Groupon. Yeah,
that's awesome, dude.
That is crazy because you're making a movie about stand-up. Like, was there? Did you make an active effort to put a lot of your friends in?
Well, you make an active effort to put friends in, then you make an effort to put in comics that are also relevant and have gravity.
Sure.
Because in this day of social media, you understand that, you know, there's a scene where there's a cop in there and Segura looks like a cop. And it's like, I'd love to have Segura in it.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll do it. And then he comes and does it. And not only that, but he can deliver. He's a great actor, yeah, and he's very relevant and funny. And
yeah,
Segura fans may want to tune in because he's in this and he's involved in stand-up. So there's all these great comics, but I wanted to acknowledge people along the way that I appreciate and respect. And you two, I just have always had fun with you guys.
So
when we're talking about the poster, it's like, I know who to put. Oh, yeah, put these guys.
I appreciate that, man, because that is still a... And I remember even sending you a text at one point being like, man, if there is just some sort of fun, like small thing. And then even after I said that, I was like, because sometimes I think like out of sight, out of mind, you know, like and we've hung enough and been pals long enough. But like also, you know, sometimes you're not at the club for a couple weeks and whatever. And as you're going through things, like sometimes if you haven't like seen somebody in a few months and you're, you know, casting something, then maybe you're not even thinking of them.
Yeah.
But so that was part of my thinking, being like, hey, just to let you know, like if there's any something, a little part or whatever. And and you so, you know, sweetly were just like, man, I love you. Of course, I'm always thinking of you, but you know, here's what it is. And this is, and
well, that's the other
you can't
thing.
Play Cedric. And I was like, all right, racist, you know? And, but for you to even like think of us for something like that is really cool. And,
well, I, for example,
and I expect residuals, but
the casting process is absolutely mind-blowing to me. And that's something you don't even think about, like, but when you're up against the clock and you got, you know, 2 weeks to production and you're going through a list of names, and then there's situations where you have like a list of comics, and then the investors want a list of actors, and then these guys want a list of comic actors, and then I have my own personal feelings of saying, I like this person, and then it's like, but you're not fucking writing the checks, so shut the fuck up and just be happy you get to do this as a first-time director. It's like, yeah, you're right.
You know, so you just... Are you telling me that there were actor choices to play Brad Williams and Adam Ray on the poster in the comedy club?
Listen, guys.
And they finally were like, yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, I auditioned fonts and names.
There's
like, Tripoli doesn't look right there, so
the investors want these YouTubers to go up on the list as the coming attractions.
Yeah. By the way, then you get the calls from the agents and they're pitching like YouTubers.
Yeah.
And
how do you respond to that?
Click.
Yeah. It's not about that.
Good for you.
Fuck no.
Whitney's in it, right?
Whitney's in it. Yeah.
Is Whitney's sex doll in it?
Excuse me?
Is Whitney's sex doll in it?
I had no idea she had a sex doll, and I follow her on Instagram. I have no idea.
The one that was on her special. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow, that was good acting. Are you in the movie too?
6 weeks. But no, I mean, there's... Yeah, she's in it. She does a great job. And I'm waiting for the impact. This is one thing I think about... And I'll mention it here. I'm in safe. I'm on home team crowd here.
Yes, you are.
Is that I wrote a story about my experiences, what I know, and what I've experienced the last 23 years in stand-up. And
which is a lot, by the way.
It's a lot. No, but we all have, right?
Yeah, but by you, I mean, think you've also consistently just worked to the bone and specials and different experiences. You know what I'm saying? So you're coming from a place where it's like, you're not just, you know, 8 years of stand-up of doing the road once every 4 months.
I'm not phoning it in by any means. No. But also, like, I know for a fact we live in a different era of society and stand-up. And I know that there are going to be some writers, reviewers that say there aren't enough female comedians in this. There aren't... there's not this dynamic, there's not more of this, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just kind of like bracing for impact, because I also want to, when the time comes, it's like, but I can't write from a woman's perspective. I can only write from my perspective. And for the most part, when I was starting especially, it was a male-dominated industry, and it to a degree it still is. And I'm not saying women can't or not or whatever, but it's like, I'm not going to make the protagonist a girl just so I am appreciated by the Huffington Post. It's like, this is my experience, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of know
it's a great answer,
happen,
by the way.
But I also know that when I cast Whitney as Whitney plays almost like this beacon of hope, because Cedric's disseminating this advice to Will, our hero, and Whitney comes in to do a guest set on Saturday, and she's proof positive that everything that Cedric has said is coming to fruition, because she's doing the Tonight Show, she's doing an independent film, and she goes up and she kills. And I hope more people gravitate towards the fact that the beacon of hope in Will's journey is bestowed to him by this great comic.
Yes.
And I would say great comic in general, period.
Of course.
And it happens to be a female. It happens to be Whitney. And the only reason I wrote it that way is because Whitney was somebody, when I was first coming to LA and I saw her making the rounds, she got a backpack, she's constantly writing, she can never hang because she got to go write this thing, she got to do that. I was like, that girl straight up fucking hustles. And so when I was casting it, I said, Whitney, this is based on you, it's written about you, and I'd love for you to do it. And she agreed to do it. I'm glad she did. I hope she's proud of it. But I hope more people think about that than the aesthetics of, like, but why can't it be this? Why can't it be? It's like,
well, those
why
are just,
can't then have her write it?
Yeah.
I know.
This is my
It's not
story.
About that. It's about what it's about, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something where you don't want to put something in there just to make it.
Just to do it.
Yeah. Think, it has to have art.
People
it has
see
have
right
a purpose.
Through that and go, oh, fuck. Like when you're driving down Sunset, you see a billboard and you see the black guy, then you got the Hispanic, then you got the Mexican. It's like, guys. You don't have to force feed diversity. If it happens, it happens. But don't force
we've also
it
we've got
it.
We've got. I mean, there's also so much shit now, and so much content to absorb and consume.
Yeah,
there. I feel like we got it. The diversity. it's diverse.
It
like,
happened.
How much more diverse? People are like, we need to diversify the diversity. Like, like go even further. Like, where's the half black, half white guy starring in a half Asian, half Jewish guy movie? It's like, dude, slow down. Like,
all right, we're gonna do a story about Wilt Chamberlain. Can Wilt Chamberlain be played by a transgender person?
No. Yeah.
What? What?
But because that, like, wasn't the story.
But we need that. We need diversity.
No, like Scarlett Johansson got all that shit for like playing Ghost in the Shell, and then she was going to play like this transgender. It's like, and then you got everybody going, but why can't a transgender person play? It's like, okay, well then find
me this Scarlett Johansson transgender
that is a draw that makes the financiers say, I will invest in your film because I know that this person will absolutely give me an international payback. Find me that person and I'll do it. But until then maybe you guys fucking crowdfund your own thing.
Yes, dude.
And, but stop bitching about maybe we're out of business.
Yeah, exactly. And there's, it's very easy to say that, and it's very easy to be on the outside telling people how to make their movie, to tell sports teams how to run their franchises, which Lord knows I do way too often. But
we all do.
Yeah, we all do, and we're probably wrong for doing that too. We don't know the X's and O's of why this guy or this girl can or shouldn't be in this position.
I want to speak to that point. Do you feel like the way that we sometimes are like, we can run that team better if we got a chance to be in the boardroom with these owners, do you think you would just, like, you know, push back and be like, oh, no, just kidding, guys, this is actually, I love, thanks for being here, man. This is, what a cool room, I didn't think it would be this big, and you got such nice coffee. And to the same extent, do you think that people who complain about, like, you know, Scarlett shouldn't play that movie because she's not a true transgender, do you think if they got into the room with the movie people, they would be like, you know, I was just angry that day, I don't know, like I'm always curious how much people would go as far to like back up their yelps to the world, you know?
I think that all these people, like all these new movie fan sites, these nerd geek culture things that are disseminating, break, like, you have all the right in the world to have an opinion on a film, of course, or what strikes your fancy or not. But the minute you're saying George Lucas ruined my childhood, it's like, well then fucker, you put pen to paper and you fucking put something together. Stop fucking, but you know how hard it is? Even to just have the discipline to sit down and just write something?
Yeah.
But then for it to be good enough for somebody to say, let's put a few million dollars behind this. It takes a lot of fucking effort and work.
Yeah, there's a lot of comfort in people being just at their keyboards where no one's going to come to them. No one's going to come after Starfish 6969 and be like, okay, where's your movie?
Yeah.
You know, and it just kind of reminds me, my brother-in-law hates Eli Manning more than anything. Hates him. If number one person he would like to punch in the face in this world would not be any sort of warlord or racist. It would be Eli Manning.
Okay.
So we're at this golf course, and one time, in the table next to us, Eli Manning sits down, and I just look at him and go, "All right, dude, here you go."
Yeah.
He's right fucking there. Yeah. He's right there. He quote unquote ruined the San Diego Chargers when he went to the Giants. Go yeah. talk to him. He goes, I can't do it. I'm like, fucking do it.
Yeah.
And then I make fun of him. The next day, we walk up to the first tee. Who walks right behind us to tee off next? Eli Manning. I'm like, number two, boy.
Yeah.
Go do it. Didn't do it.
Didn't do it.
And that's what I think all these people would do if they were actually in those situations.
In the moment, yeah.
If they actually made the movie, if they actually ran the team, if they actually put together the lineup of the Comedy Store every night,
yeah.
and they were told, like, all right, well, if I would do it, I would do it this way. No, you wouldn't. No, you
yeah,
wouldn't.
It's,
or you would, you'd fail.
It when is kind of like heartbreaking sometimes with social media, even like, you know, I think I'm at a point where I'm 95% numb to mm-hmm. like seeing bad shit about it. It's like, it's fine. It happens to everybody, right?
Sure.
But like even like today, I'm doing this benefit at the improv tonight,
dude,
right?
We get it. You give back. All right, so, keep going.
We get it. You just did the Folds of Honor show with me and Corolla. We get it.
I still wear my hat.
Yeah, it's good.
It's a good hat. But, yeah. but we go.
I use the bag.
I'm reading like this thing on Twitter, and it just like, look at this list of has-beens. And I'm like, dude, why? Like, why would you, like, it's a benefit. Like, what the fuck? And you want to respond, but it's like, yeah. why even respond? It's like, why would you put that out there?
So the aforementioned Folds of Honor show that we did at the Irvine Improv, it was me, you, Corolla, Heather McDonald, Tone Bell, great lineup. And I posted about it, and someone wrote, I'm not going to go see a bunch of Trump haters perform on stage. I'm going to support my president because he supports the troops. And I'm like, the charity is Folds of Honor. It literally supports the troops.
Yeah.
It literally does that.
Wow. Yeah. Pick a lane, man.
And I never respond to Facebook. Like, I never, that one got me.
Yeah.
It's like, you want to support, this literally gives money to soldiers.
Yeah.
What's wrong with
every
you?
Every now and then I want to, but I don't. And I remember.
Well. Are you saying a Trump support? A Trump supporter wasn't logical with their thinking, Brad?
I mean, that one.
I think it's gotten so out of hand these last few weeks where, but the last few years with the left and the right. I don't know how invested you are emotionally in politics, but I've withdrawn myself. I cut my cable cord. I've become like apolitical. And I was mm-hmm. watching this Frontline documentary on PBS. And I don't know if you guys have heard about this or whatever, but during that last election,
mm-hmm.
when the Russians were hacking our, you know, everything with Facebook, when I just thought when they created a Black Lives Matter on one side of the street and then a Blue Lives Matter on the other side of the street,
mm-hmm.
and then all these citizens show up to show how passionate they are about each cause. But what they didn't realize is that the Russians created that form for the left and for the right and created that time and the street, and everybody fell for it. And everybody fell for it. And I just thought, that's why this is divisive, because everybody's falling for it. Everybody watches CNN and goes, yeah, that's right. Or everybody watches Fox News and goes, yeah, that's right. And they fall for these traps and get emotionally invested on their side or this side.
Yeah.
And it's just like, if you're angry at Trump, if you're angry at Obama, you're part of the problem because mm-hmm. you fucking fell for it. They're trying to divide us, and you've got to see above it. And so for me as a comic, I'm trying to, like, you know, not partake in those things, but also
sure.
try to bridge the gap collectively where we can just laugh.
Yeah, I try not to do anything where I can be like, I try to just go on stage and be like, hey, whatever side you're on, cool, come here, escape, laugh. Now there's absolutely places for comedians to go and use that as their form and put in.
If you want to be Bill Maher, be Bill Maher, for sure. And you want to be Sarah Silverman, you want to be Owen. But I just think then you're also part of the problem, though.
Yeah. I had something happen at the Pittsburgh Improv, which, by the way, new favorite club. And they just redid it in November. So it's like,
it's pretty great.
It's real nice. And second show, a guy front row. I have the clip. I'll probably end up doing something with it. Kid up front. And I when I have this bit about talking about what I want to do as a kid and my real dream was being the NBA and all this. And so it's a good opportunity to do some organic crowd work about, like, oh, what do you do now? And what was your kid dream? That thing when you were delusional as a kid, when you were like, you put your heart and your mind to it, you can do anything. Then you grow up mm-hmm. become an adult and you realize we all have limitations. It's time to quit and reassess, you know? And I go, so what was that on the playground dream? And then he said it. And then I go, oh, what do you do now? And he goes, I work at Sylvan Learning Center. And I go, oh, cool. And I'm going to paraphrase the dialogue, but I go, is it pretty fun? Do the kids, do all the kids, what kind of kids are there that need help? He goes, well, all kinds. He goes, and then he just says, kid, by the way, already looked kind of uncomfortable.
Let me get a fork and knife. This is going to be yummy.
He already looked uncomfortable kind of talking to me, so I'm trying to already just kind of read the room as far as how much. And his polo, I even said, what's your polo saying? He's like, oh, it's this. And I go, oh, he's a golf polo. And he goes, oh, you like to golf? He goes, yeah. And then cool. And his wife was already kind of looking down, and the mother-in-law, who just looked like she was going to be the worst version of herself, and she was. And so this guy, I go, and so the kids all need a lot of help. He goes, yeah. He goes, not really the white ones, because they're fine. By the way, again, I'm paraphrasing, but it was tonight on Sports Center, on Racist Sports Center. So he says that, and I literally just was like, yep, like when he said that. And then literally there was a black couple right to their left. Yeah. And the woman stands up and goes, I'm out. Stood up and walked out. And the guy comes up and he looks at me and he goes, I mean, what am I supposed to do, man? And I was like, and now I'm just like immediately like, sit down, but also, and then all the chatter, the room chatter just starts going off. And I go, no, hold on a second. I go, now I think I want to give you a chance to explain what you, wow, that was fucked up. And everybody started laughing. And then I just go, but then it was real weird. And I go, what did you mean by, and then he even started to just get real white in the face of like, and he even said after,
which of course he liked that he was getting white in the face. He's like, cool, I'm getting better as a human being now.
Hilarious. It got real. Where were you when I needed you? He started to get real uncomfortable. So now, and I always play my crowd work like to the, you know, highest of my intelligence and play the moment real, because it just has worked for me. And so I tried to give him benefit of the doubt, and I could see how uncomfortable he got. And I was like, maybe he got a little, you know, and but the audience, and it was also like, you know, everyone could hear like what he said. So there was nobody like, wait, what? To where I could be like, okay, moving on.
Oh, he said the blankety blank. Like,
but as soon as he said it, everyone went, oh, he goes, no, I mean, what I mean by, and then it was over at that point. And then I go, well, let me give you a chance to explain. I go, because I could tell that maybe, you know, you got thrown off. You weren't expecting to have some comic conversation tonight, and you did, and maybe you just weren't. And then I go, so can I give you a chance to explain? And then he just goes, no. He goes, why don't you just do some jokes? Because the crowd work part is, this isn't very funny. And I go, of course it's not funny, man. I go, you just said some white supremacist Nazi shit. I go, and of course I'm going to have to take a beat to recover from the fucking Nazi propaganda you just spit out.
But you are being a good guy.
Yeah, but and then I go, with that being said, dude, I go, can you? Because I kept trying to be like, dude, maybe you just had a moment of weakness.
Are we in China yet?
Yeah, right, and I go, maybe you're not such a bad guy. And then he kind of and then it was weird and people kind of yelling shit. And I go, I mean, this couple did just get up and leave. I feel like that's probably not mean something about who you are. Yeah. And then the mother-in-law goes, he's a good person. I go, I bet he is. I feel like, you know, maybe he does treat, you know, the other kids the same. And then he just and I go, but let me give you a chance, dude, to try to explain. And then he just goes, you know what? I don't need this. And then he just stands up. I go, all right, well, true colors, dude, you are a piece of shit. I go, get the fuck out. And then him and his girl stands up and he's on his way out. And then I just go, sucks you had to leave. I go, but maybe don't, you know, I go, and I like how you're trying to make me feel bad. I go, but you're the one that said the fucked
you
up shit.
The shit. Yeah.
I go, and guess what? He goes, hey, this crowd work part's not even working. And he goes, do jokes. I go, I did jokes for the first 20 minutes. You're the one that fucked this shit up. And then when he walked out, and then we, and so people were clapping, and then it was weird for a minute.
Yeah.
And I've done this one other time where I kicked out a drunk birthday party in Sacramento, and I needed to get the room back immediately. And I was like, well, I go, sometimes that happens. I go, so it's like going to Denny's. Sometimes you don't get what you ordered for. You wanted a Moons Over Miami and said you get hash browns with pubes on them, right? And then I goes, who wants a shot of tequila? Everybody goes fucking nuts. The whole, about everybody a shot.
Oh, and, Jesus, that's nice. How much was that bill?
It was and so
the club, I thought of doing it, but I'm like,
no, the club, they helped me out, and okay, so yeah, good. And so got the whole room back, and then I started talking to an elderly couple.
You obviously
couple.
Did this Thursday, not Saturday, right?
This was Friday early show.
Oh yeah. A weekend.
Yeah. That's a
and it was pretty
bad,
full.
Right?
It was,
nice.
And it was pretty full.
Taking care of the people.
Yeah.
Bring a t-shirt cannon next time. It'll be cheaper.
But so and the show got back on course, and Greg, it was still another hour.
Yeah.
But there was a great moment where I started talking to an elderly couple in the corner, and they were real fun. And given the way all my crowd work usually goes, real fun. There's a good back and forth. I can go back to them two or three times throughout the set. And at one point, we're having fun a really fun interaction. And the woman and talking, they've been married 47 years and started getting after the real personal stuff into their sex life. And at one point I was like, God, you guys are being, I go, thank you for being so cool. Whenever people are clapping for them, cause they're just being so fun. And then at one point I looked down to the table that was, cause they were sitting front row.
Sure.
And I go, you see how fun crowd work? Oh fuck. Well, so anyway, you know, I was like, oh God, I go, I wish I could have been here to seen this and see how this was supposed to go down.
All you have to do is answer some questions, not say racist shit.
That's what I said. I go, here's how easy it is to be an audience member. You get talked to, you either don't say anything, or you laugh and you don't, or you don't say something racist and fucked up. But anyway,
the Sacramento was the site of the greatest accomplishment I've ever had in stand-up comedy.
What's
I don't
that?
Know if you guys know this, but the greatest thing that's ever happened as a stand-up, and I've never heard of it happening.
Okay.
I haven't heard of it happening since.
Okay.
Maybe you have, but I was in Sacramento and I was on stage and I was on a run. I was on a fucking hot run. No, I was just like, anything I'm saying right now is just working. It's one of those moments that just gels, right?
Mm-hmm.
Killing. And I look down, I see like this guy, he's laughing. And then I look over and I see like security coming over. And then I just see him, this guy, get up and run out, right? So I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. And I finished my act and Colin Jost, who was featuring for me at the time.
Wow.
Definitely not featuring for me anymore. He comes over, he goes,
now,
dude.
Now he's banging the aforementioned Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, but which version? The transgender version? No. Yeah.
He goes, hey, you got to come here. I got to take a picture. I go, okay, yeah. I go out to the hallway and there's a piece of shit in the hallway. He goes, you made that guy laugh so hard. He shit his pants. So I took a picture next to this piece of shit. And he framed it and sent me a picture on this date, Sacramento Punchline, Steve Byrne made a man shit his pants. And what happened was, it was the Saturday 8 o'clock show, and he shit his pants and he ran past the crowd for the line for the next show, and they saw these shit nuggets falling out. They're like, what the fuck? How good is this show?
You know? Dude, I'm wearing shorts and I'm freeballing it tonight. Honey, we got to go back and change.
But I did it again in Canada at the Yuck Yucks in Calgary. Simone was with me, and a guy shit his pants there. So I'm domestic and international, boys. That's me.
Dude, wow. That is...
I think that's just you, my friend.
If I bring you up at the store again, that is how I'm bringing you to the stage.
Intro, yeah.
This guy's made two people shit themselves.
Yeah.
Dude, that's unbelievable. Well,
that's what a lot of people say to us after the show is, oh, I laughed so hard I almost pissed myself. And I always say, like, next time I'll get you. You fucking got him.
Well, in Columbus... Wait,
how... Go ahead.
In Columbus, I was performing, and
Dave Stroop.
For
Dave Stroop, who loves, just love, best guy.
And
best guy ever. Dave, I will, for the second time, tell you that I'm available this fall. I think I have 2 weekends in October open. Looking to fill them. Looking to stroop them up.
Stroop them up. Stroop them up.
Starting this fall, Dave Stroop and his brand new sitcom, Stroop Him Up.
And it's just Adam's the wacky neighbor. Can I come in?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, oh, Adam.
Come on, I just need 2 stroops of raisins from my raisinless brand cereal. I don't know. We'll work on the jokes, but yeah.
2 stroops of raisins?
Yeah, I don't know.
So somebody, I go out in the lobby and there's a cop there. Mm-hmm. I go, well, what's going on? What happened? They're like, oh, we had to kick somebody out of here. I'm like, I didn't see anybody get kicked out. You're like, no, in the club. Mm. I guess there was a couple in the club and then they went into the men's bathroom. And
yeah.
And a guy was getting a blumpkin.
Not what I thought you were going to say.
I
thought you were going to say a blowjob or a pumpkin, but not both together.
I hate that I know what that is.
No, yeah. I love that you... I would hate that you didn't know what that is.
And it was
so
like...
Explain it.
Two people shit their pants and a blumpkin with an asterisk, because that was not during the show. That was,
explain
that was in
to
the
people,
bathroom stall.
Explain it to our listeners who may not be
a guy's taking a shit and getting a blowjob at the same time.
It's pretty easy if you just put the word together. If you're playing Pictionary, it's like two lines get drawn and you know what it is.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. During your show?
During my show, yeah. During the show. I came out and saw that and it was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
By the way, how hard do you have to laugh to shit your pants?
I don't know. Well, the thing is, I had
See Steve Byrne and find out.
Yeah, I've seen him.
I had a part about like crop dusting and farting, so it was very apt. I think I must have...
You also got to be somewhat on the poop train, right? For that...
You
got
to
get to your,
train, yeah.
your final destination to be like, it's coming out in my pants. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because
can't
like...
Stop it.
I'm thinking about the times I've laughed. Yeah, it's like pee is always at the forefront of the releasing. You know, if you're, you know, if there's a show and like, you know, who's going to get released first from laughing too hard? You know, poop is usually
Well, I ran into somebody at the Comedy Store, and they're like, yeah, I was at that show at Sacramento. I was like, oh, what show? They're like, the show where you made a guy shit his pants.
That's amazing, dude.
And they're like, well, always come see you. I'm like, well, thank you. Yeah. That's kind of cool. You know, some people want to see a movie, a sitcom. It's like, hey, you made that guy shit his pants.
You truly are one of the best. And I love you boys.
Thank you guys so much.
I saw you probably not even a month ago at the store in the main room. And, dude, I think I tagged in a video that I took without sound of a moment you were having, or maybe with crowd work. But, dude, I mean, in a 15-minute set, you crushed so hard, dude.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about the store, and you guys know. It's like, oh, fuck. You see the lineup, you're like, oh, Christ. All right.
Gotta bring it.
Yeah. You're like, I was going to try some new shit.
I don't know, man. You're consistently delivering at a high level always. And it's not
the same. I mean, we're all running the same circle.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, yeah.
So we're all giving each other Blumpkins right now.
All Blumpkins. Let's go.
Yeah, we all work Stroop's clubs. I love it.
That's how we end this. That's how we end the podcast, right? Follow me down to the.
Well, Steve really
FaceTime Stroop and
really going to great lengths to promote his movies.
Welcome to Blumpkin Podcast. Yeah. We know how it ends.
Amazing Jonathan on YouTube. All Things Comedy YouTube page, right?
Yeah, you just go to YouTube, type in Always Amazing. It's there, it's free. And it's the great fantastic. Thing is that Jonathan is reading the comments, and he's hit me up, and I know that he's reading them when he's in bed, and he's very, just kind of over the moon. So he's really happy.
That's so sweet, man.
Yeah.
And
the opening act.
The opening act.
Where
that'll come out early 2020 at some point. And then I think we're all doing Comedy Jam together the 20th, which I'm looking forward to. I'm getting an Uber. Because last time
we did, go hard that night?
We went to Rock and Riley's afterwards and had a bit of a bender.
That was great. We should that night too. That's because this is like also the 5-year anniversary, I think, of the jam.
And we got it. We got to blow it out.
And all we're saying is when you go see Steve Byrne live when he comes to your town, maybe wear some Depends.
That's right. Yeah.
Get prepared.
And Steve Byrne live on all socials. Yeah.
Everything social. Yeah. Steve Byrne live. But I honestly thank you guys so much for having me. And I love hanging out with you guys.
This
you
is
guys
the best.
Two fellas I see when I see in the clubs. I'm like, you make me happy. So
likewise, dude. And check for us in the opening act. We
we
your
appear in a conversation. Our names are there.
Stroop a text and tell him that I'm in the opening act.
yes, I will.
And he'll be like, oh, what part does he play? Himself. Oh, shit, what does he say? I guess you're probably not going to book him. He's just a poster on the wall.
Two Stroops are raising.
So, get out, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
Meh, what's up, dog? This is your pal Bugs Bunny. Say, I got a question for you. Do you know who has the head of Elmer Fudd and the body of Foghorn Leghorn? Why, that's Adam Ray and Brad Williams. Ain't I a stinker?
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.